Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of Experience Experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it. Hello, welcome to Life Lab. I'm David Ponder.
I'm Zach Schaefer.
And today we're talking about something that I think we're going to talk about from many different angles. I think at first when you hear about it, you're going to be underwhelmed, but stick with us, because I think we're going to...
Yeah, we were.
We'll do something.
We were underwhelmed when we saw it. We're like, what the fuck are we going to talk about?
So let's just throw it out there. We're talking about distance. And when you think about distance, everyone thinks about spatial difference, distance. Spatial distance. So how far one thing is away from another. And Zach and I, of course, like we're like, all right, what's the topic today? Distance. Like, oh, this is going to be boring.
Yeah, but I came up with a couple things that I think are interesting. And I guess if the point of Life Lab is to experiment with life and stretch your brain on things, hopefully we'll accomplish that for ourselves.
Well, I found something that got me thinking, and I have one main premise that I think we can explore, and I think that'll get us.
Well, give us your definition. You always like to start there.
Okay. Actually, didn't have one, but let me do that real quick. Distance is the extent or amount of space between two things, points, lines.
Yeah, when I think of it, I just think the space between two things or people. Distance.
Yes. Yes. That makes sense.
Nice. Yeah, and so my brain immediately went to physical distance between things on planet Earth, if you will, or in space. But it also quickly started shifting to the human side and the social side and the relational side and sort of problem-solving conventional wisdom, right? What's the shortest distance between two points? A straight line.
Well, and I started thinking about, you know, what about the world that we're living in now, right? So obviously this is 2020. 2020 has been heavily impacted by this new term, social distancing.
Yeah.
You know? Right. And how are people coping? Because people are coping and they're doing different things to try to cope, you know? They're being creative in the ways that they try to bridge the distance.
Well, yeah, it should have been called physical distancing and not social distancing, because actually what we're trying to do is overcome the physical distancing to find creative ways to still be social. So that's, you're not trying to socially distance, you're trying to physically distance and still be social, and that's the problem.
You're right. That's actually, yeah, I agree with that 100%.
So whatever.
But I mean, technology comes into play there big
time. Oh, huge. Think of how bad the pandemic must have been in 1918 when they had to physically distance. And you just couldn't go across the river to see my mom and sit in her driveway, per se, if I wasn't wealthy enough to own a car or to pull her up on Zoom. There's things like that, you know, and it's like, well, I guess I'll mail her a letter.
I know. I mean,
but then that letter would be really meaningful.
It would have to be meaningful. It would take a long time to get there.
Right.
It would be the only communication that would be going back and forth between.
Okay, well, that's kind of interesting. So, yeah, the immediacy's not there, but does it – all you're trying to do with any of this communication, whether it's Zoom or letter writing, is create that emotional energy and that story and that memory. So is letter writing, because of – clearly there's a lot of challenges it faces compared to Zooming, is it less meaningful? Or is it more meaningful? Or is it different? It's clearly different.
Because there are other options and people use them all the time. If it was the only option, it would be, I believe it would be more meaningful. You know, using a little bit of imagination here because I really haven't lived in a world, but I can sort of remember, I can remember when friends of ours moved to Guam, right? And my buddy sent letters from Guam because at that time, the other option was a long-distance phone call that would cost a lot of money, you know?
Not if you were part of Excel. What were we in?
Oh, yeah.
The pyramid scheme. What was it?
Yeah, it was Excel.
Excel. Join Excel. Thanks, Randy. You're still like our only person
for long distance. But yeah, so it, because of that, there really wasn't a good alternative. This was basically the internet maybe was a fledgling thing at that point, but it definitely wasn't being used for communication worldwide at that point in time. And I can remember like when you get a package from a friend or something, picture, right? You might read the letter a couple times. You might look at that picture more, right? Like it means something more. Like what did he mean when he said this? And I can only imagine like romantic relationships during World War II where they're sending letters back and forth and that's all they can do.
Oh, yeah. My former dissertation advisor, mentor, and friend, Kathy Miller, wrote a very famous book in some circles. Her dad wrote her mom letters. I think it was weekly. It was on some crazy frequent basis while he was in the war the whole time. She has hundreds, every one she saved, and she wrote a whole book on it. And the meanings, you know, like that's how people kept their relationships alive. And I'm sure military people do the same thing today, but probably Zoom and stuff a lot more first. But I would assume they still probably write letters or type letters as well.
Well, and so I'll say it like this. Let's put economic terms on it, right? So the amount of communication, the scarcity of communication would make it more valuable.
Right, exactly. It'd feel more valuable, and that's all that matters, that's is how matters. It feels to you. What's the meaning? I think if everyone's writing letters all the time, it's meaningful. But the fewer people that write letters, the more meaningful it is to get that letter. Like well, today, when you get a hand – when's the last time somebody hand wrote you a letter?
Yeah. Well, and I think it's communication, right? So the medium is cool. In a letter, you feel the paper and you can
tactile,
you know, see the handwriting and there's something personal to it. But also, it you can't transmit too many thoughts and in a certain amount of time with letters. You know what I mean? Like right now, I believe that everything and when it comes to communication of thoughts and ideas, especially with people, trying to bridge that gap is much easier. There's much more volume of that communication. Like, I don't know, pick up the phone, call them. Why don't you just send them a text message? Well, you know, why don't you send them a recorded voice message? Like, you can do it in so many ways. If I make a mistake, if I forget to communicate something to you, it's not a process for me to pull out a piece of paper, you know, take the time to get a break in my day, pull out a piece of paper, think about my thoughts, organize them, write it down to try and say, what did I want to say to him that I didn't get through last time? You know, writing a letter and sending it and waiting days or weeks for it to get to you would be that process. Now it's like, oh, shit, I forgot to tell him this. Hey, man, I forgot to tell you this,
right,
blah, 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 whatever. So no, it doesn't mean anywhere near as much. It's way more effective when it comes to communication because it's immediate, right? And you can immediately transmit new ideas
correct,
and correct
yeah.
and whatever. But no, it's not as meaningful. But so that distance, what we're talking about here is bridging distance, right? And going back to what we're talking about with like social distancing and what our world is dealing with right now, we're talking about how technology in the world of today has bridged distance so much, both social distance and physical distance. And the physical distance is what's got us in trouble. We are able to fly around the world, and people commonly do for business, for pleasure, and, you know.
Or not even just travel, urbanization.
Urbanization.
You always talk about the hyper cities of the future and mm-hmm.
yeah.
shit.
Look at China. Yeah.
Good luck going and living in one of those, folks.
Yeah. Well, look at China and the way that it has built itself up. Everyone's moving from the country into their major cities. I forget what the number is. It's something crazy. Like they've got 20 cities with more than 5 million.
They're just reducing the distance to get to jobs.
But yeah, so like the physical distance has allowed this virus to transmit in a way that it wouldn't have done in the past, right? And so we have bridged distance, both all kinds of distance, in different ways, technologically and physically. I think it's interesting the world that we have in now. And now we're trying to figure out, well, what the hell do we do about this? So
I just, to me, the other thing I thought about with distance, so it's easy to think physical. Clearly, there's not much interesting thought, in my opinion, there. But it's a real thing that humans are have always tried to overcome. You know, that's what we see from Star Trek. We're always trying to overcome distance with horses to cars and all our goofy devices that we use because we hate – humans have an aversion to walking, apparently, but it's always trying to get to A to B much quicker.
Yes.
But what about distance for yourself? Your goals. Every goal you set in life is really about distance. Zach right here, then there's space, Zach in the future. I'm trying to achieve and bridge the gap, the distance between Zach today, his Achilles tendons rehabbing, and Zach in 1 month when I want Zach to run or jog a mile again. There's real distance there. And so when you put together a plan to go along with your goal, that helps you envision how you're going to cut that distance down, how you're going to bridge that distance. 100%. Does that make sense?
It does, and it actually hits one of these things. So let me get where I was going when I said I found something and I thought it was really great.
Oh, sorry. I cut you off earlier,
no,
I apologize.
You didn't cut me off. I did not get into this. I wanted to let this evolve into what it is. But basically, this says psychological distance.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, you know, okay, so fine. But there are different types of psychological difference. There are gaps between yourself and other people. Social distance, we already said that. The present and the future, the one that you were just talking
right.
about. Temporal distance, they yep. call that. Physical location and faraway places, just spatial distance. Or imagining something and actually experiencing it. That's experiential distance.
Hmm. Yeah, so I like it.
They broke it down into those
That's
four.
That's awesome.
I thought those would be great because – let's give us credit. The first thing we did was hit three out of those four.
Wow, we're pretty fucking good.
It's because we're fucking smart.
Oh, no, that's funny. So I got to give a shout out to my boy Will Smith. Yes, his real name is Will Smith. I actually know two Will Smiths, and neither one are getting jiggy with it. But this Will Smith is my Texas Will Smith. Great guy. I've learned a lot from him. He was an accountant and wanted to shore up his public speaking skills. And he already was an accountant, and he decided to take a public speaking class at 6 p.m. at night on Tuesday nights at a community college, and I happened to be teaching there to earn some extra money to go spend on alcohol probably. And we just hit it off, and he was just a fantastic student, and then we became friends, and him and his wife would have us over for dinner, and they had a really nice little Texas ranch. And anyway, he gave me probably the number one best piece of relationship advice I've ever been given from anyone. And it had the word distance in it. And he told it to him and his wife. They had a great relationship and we're talking. And we had just got married. And they said, hey, can we offer you one piece of relationship advice? And I'm like, please, yeah. You know, like, help us be like you guys. They're just really happy. And he's like, never let distance come between you and your wife. He's like, it's really easy to let those gaps get in there and to fill that distance with silent resentments. And as soon as those silent resentments get there, they get fortified and they become like concrete. And then that distance grows. And then one day you can wake up and be like, who the hell is this person that I've married? And be like, they changed. And it's like, no, you both changed. You both allowed that distance to get created. And he shared that because he had been, I believe it was from a previous relationship he had. But either way, that hit me. I'm like, wow. And so now anytime I feel that gap forming, I have that conversation that I'm so candid, way too about the truth and honesty and get it out there than I should be. But it's because of what that guy told me. So thank you, Will.
Well, I don't think you're too candid and you get the truth out there more than you should. It's that other people allow discomfort to not let them be that candid, you know, and then that distance just naturally grows. You know, one of the questions I was going to ask that I thought would be a good thought experiment is, can you be sitting right next to somebody and feel lonely? And the answer is absolutely you can, you know, because of all these different types of distances that we're talking about and the distance that you just talked about in a relationship. That can grow. Absolutely.
I think that's the more powerful one. A lot of humans spend their brain power figuring out, how do I fix the problem of distance? How do I innovate distance out of existence in terms of getting A to B? When we really should be thinking more about, eliminating distance relationally. That gets back to that issue of connection. And we all are connected on a level, but we choose not to acknowledge that. And so in your personal relationships, you really need to ask yourself, where do I have distance with my partner or my friends? What's that missing conversation? What's going on? What am I doing? Because obviously the other person can always be doing something. That's easy to see. But what are you doing to create that distance and to leave it there?
You know, one of the things I always... So I think we're touching on two things, social distance and experiential distance.
Yeah.
Because one is empathy, right? One is understanding what the other person is thinking based on the experiences and thoughts and whatever that they've had. And the other one is just the gap between yourself and the other person as far as communication, what communication needs to occur to bridge that gap. And we were just talking about this before we started this. It seems to me that I'm becoming more successful in bridging all gaps with people by first focusing on them. I would say experiential, yeah, experiential distance, right? And then only after that, figuring out how do I then gap the social distance by crafting my message and sending it to them. So
listen first, speak second.
Everyone else, I believe the natural inclination, my natural inclination, was, well, I got to figure out how to get this message over to them. And you just keep sending it and it hits a brick wall. And then you're like, eh, that didn't work. I'll repackage it this other way and I'll send it again.
As soon as you in your internal head are telling yourself the story, they're not listening. No, they're not getting my message. It's because you're not listening to them. No, guaranteed.
That's
awesome. Not you, humans in general.
Yeah.
Man, that's good. I like that.
But also understanding when there are certain messages that they just aren't ready to receive.
Oh, sure. Timing. So time ties into distance in space, in physics, in math, but in relationships as well. Those two things, they go together. And so in interpersonal communication as a field, so there's you can get a degree in communication and you can study relationships and how to improve them and where they go wrong. There's this theory called relational dialectics, and it's a really fancy academic way of saying that there's always going to be a push and pull of two polar opposites that can create a healthy tension in a relationship. A perfect example is on one end of a continuum, you have togetherness all the time. You spend every waking moment of the day with a person, and on the other end is alone. You're completely alone. Well, most healthy relationships, you have to have a balance of that. So you have, even if it's your spouse or that one person that, oh, they just make your heart do flips, you've got to get some space in there. You've got to get some distance, whether it's a marriage or friends. When you spend too much time with one friend, it just gets stale. And this is coming from a guy that partied a lot. Like when you party too much with a buddy, it eventually be like, all right, like you need to go home for a little while. Like let's refresh, recharge, and well, then it changes.
I can relate with what you're saying because I've had several instances in my life where I have spent almost all of my time with one person for an extended amount of time. I think most people probably have that.
At some point, yeah. And you might not say how you're feeling because it could hurt their feelings or vice versa, but it creates an unhealthy dependency. Like we need to have emotional balance on our own, not from another human being. And so you've got to find that distance. Like getting distance can be really healthy in relationships because it gives you time to recharge, flex yourself, your individuality, be you, and then go back to that other person. So yeah. A little bit of a different take is on distance.
I like that. And that's not just physical distance, you know?
No, it's psychological is the main one I'm talking about. Like, I need a break here. Yeah. Or you probably need a break from me. I'm sure looking back, I can just wear people out.
Yeah.
Because I could just be go, 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 especially when I was drinking a lot and it's just, ugh, I would have hated me.
So, yeah, you do. You do need to have your own, you know, like that experiential distance or whatever. Like, I need to just go do this on my own, you know, and then I'll bring it back to the relationship. It'll make the relationship stronger because I will have some new stuff to contribute. Right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Nice.
You know what? There were examples of each of these four pieces of psychological distance that I thought would be good to at least talk about.
Sure.
So the first one was talking about narrowing social distance. And it said, think about negotiation. Skillful negotiation requires that you consider not only your own interests, but the interests of other parties.
I would disagree and say the most skilled negotiators almost fully consider only the interests of the other person. Because if you go into a negotiation and you don't know your interests, you're an idiot and you're going to lose. Like, you better have your plan together. But when you're in the negotiation, your 100% focus should be on them, their emotions. Why do they want this? What's going on with them? And you're there to learn. And that's what all the negotiation gurus talk about.
Yeah, the negotiations that I've gone into recently, I've basically thought about it like this. The only reason we're sitting at the negotiation table together in the first place is because we both want the same thing, right? So let's build on that. And then I naturally do what everyone else does, except instead of saying like, well, what is it that I want out of this? I just set some ground rules for myself to protect myself to say, what are the things that I won't give up?
Your non-negotiables. What's your bottom line, your non-negotiables? Yep.
And once I have those two things, I have a shared understanding with the other person that this is what we want, right? And like, let's talk about that. We sit at the table together and we go, let's just make sure we're talking about the same thing. This is what I think we're trying to negotiate. Would you agree? Yes. I would like that because of this.
Nice.
You would like it because of that.
Right? I like it all. Where does distance come in? Help clarify for me.
Well, that's like bridging this I don't know. It's almost like a distance of
gotcha.
Understanding.
So there's something in negotiation called the ZOPA, the zone of possible agreements. You're trying to bridge the, say, I'm way over here to the left, you're way over here to the right. There is a ZOPA in the middle. Let's find it together.
And then saying, once you have a shared goal to achieve on that vision, then that's step two. And it's almost like sending the message like we were talking about, right? Like, all right, now most people go, now I just got to send my message about what I want and what my non-negotiables are. And that's actually the wrong way to do it in my experience. The right way to do it is then to focus on them and say, we both have this shared goal. We've just talked about it. We clarified it. We've bridged that distance. Now there's the distance of what is it that you're going to have to give and what am I going to have to give? Let's talk. And what do you want versus what do I want? But let's talk about you.
It's a simple way. Ask yourself in a negotiation, does what I'm about to say, will it most likely create more distance between us or less? Let's just do a quick experiment here, Dave. We're sitting down to negotiate this easy button. You're trying to buy it from me.
That was easy.
Right? It's just a big red easy button. And imagine we sit down and I go, okay, just from the start, here's my three non-negotiables. These are the things that are absolutely off the table. Is that creating more or less distance? Versus, hey, you know, help me understand, what would make you walk away today from the table? Like, what are your non-negotiables that are just like absolutely off the table? Oh, and then you talk about it and like, good, thank you for sharing those. Well, here's a couple of mine.
Well, and I would even start off before that, and
you don't have to. I'm just giving a specific I'm not saying that's where I'd start the negotiation. I'm just giving a tactical example.
No, that's a good one. That's good. That's good. I like it.
Cool. No, it's your idea. I'm just saying, it's not just the concept behind the idea. That is in the timing of how something is said. You can bridge distance by using timing effectively in your communication, or you can perfect fucking example. Stand-up comedians. It's all about distance and timing. Everything they say, how they say it, and when they say it is either creating more distance between them and their audience or less distance between them and their audience.
And it's usually experiential distance, imagining something and experiencing it. They tell stories. Man, stories are so powerful. I think we should revisit that.
I think we have storytelling coming up again in the lineup
I think it's one of the most powerful ways to decrease experiential distance between people because you can relate.
Yeah, people get their own epiphany bridge out of a story.
Man, that's happened to me. Okay, so we talked about negotiation, skillful negotiation, narrowing social distance. How about this one? Effective time management means accurately predicting which commitments will be the most pressing in the future. Temporal distance.
Yep. Yeah,
I think you're very good at that. I think it's something that a lot of people have.
Again, I appreciate the compliment, but it's like telling Shaq, man, you're good at being tall. It just, I'm good at it because it was how mom and dad's genetics made me.
Well, they gave a great example of this when they were saying, you committed to a speaking engagement or something, right? Mm-hmm. And then the time starts getting closer and all these other things were more important, took your time, and you're not prepared and you're wishing, I shouldn't have committed to that, right? Well, like that temporal distance was, okay, I need to accurately predict if I can make this commitment now and then weigh it against what is going to happen in the future that is going to be, you know, fighting for time with this commitment, and will I be able to fulfill it and prepare appropriately?
But that's where it gets into, in my opinion, humans. We just, even people that are conservative, not politically, in terms of like their money and their time, they still think they can predict the future. Like the guy that, or the gal that wants to save 80 cents of every dollar for their financial future in their retirement, they're then trying to predict and reduce the distance that I'm going to be alive and healthy and well when I'm that old. So my point with your example, I love it. But it's like, in the, we're constantly acting like we're going to be exactly how we feel right now in the future. And it's just a joke. It's a total gamble. But that's what we have to have life. Like, we have to move, keep moving forward. So that's the story we tell ourselves, is I won't have a brain aneurysm between now and then, you know?
Well, and I think this one's a lot more important and a lot more nuanced, because I feel like that's something that we could just talk about and move on. But actually, this is that where prioritization comes into play and values come into play, because you cannot predict the future and you do make commitments today for the future. Now, you inevitably will do a poor job of predicting the future, and you'll have conflicting commitments, and there's where we come to priority and value, right? I used to think when I was a kid or when I were younger, okay, this isn't working out, or this is going to be extremely difficult for me because it's going to require me to – if I'm going to keep this ball in the air in the juggling act, I'm going to have to drop this other ball. And so – what do I have to do? I have to convince the party that I'm letting down that I have a good enough reason to let this ball drop. And I used to think, in every instance, if you were suave enough, if you were smooth enough, if you had a good enough excuse, so to speak, you could do that. As I've gotten older, I've come to understand that's not it at all. It's you as a person have to be able to accept the fact that you are going to drop a commitment, that you are going to take a reputation hit in that area, but it's going to be worth it to you because it is in line with your values and your priorities.
It's about freedom and responsibility. It's all about choices. That's it. And so the people that don't want the responsibility, they just tell themselves a better story, a different story that makes them feel good and act like they don't have responsibility for breaking the commitment.
100%. And I mean, this is not something that it's like a big thing where I'm talking about speaking engagements. I'm talking about spending time with your kids and your family when you're a businessman.
Tie it back to me, though, for distance. Make that clear for me.
It's the temporal distance.
Okay.
It's saying, in the present, I've got this view of the future, and it is a harmonious view, right?
Everything's kumbaya.
But between now and the future, things will change, right? And there will be conflict. So how do I bridge the gap between my vision of the future as it is, and I sit right here, and the actual future when it hits me, right? And that's proper planning to bridge that gap. And it's and sometimes you just got to accept the fact that what you predicted and the way that you prepared is not going to match the future that became the present. And how do you now deal with it?
Nice.
There's that gap there.
Yeah. No, you're right. That's good.
And I like, when we're talking about temporal distance, I like thinking about it in the small things that happen to you every day. You know what I mean? Like, you told a friend you were going to go to lunch, and now something came up with the family and you can't do it. You know, something popped up for work, and yeah, you were going to read books with your kids that night, but you know, you just, sorry, hon, can you read those books to the kids? I got to take care of this. Like, those little things add up. It's constant.
Those little things are what matter most in aggregate over time. Yeah. And those are where people's regrets come from.
Yeah.
You don't get to your coffin and go, damn, if I could have just had one more work call at 9:05 when the kids were going to bed.
Ooh, that's good. So does temporal distance work in the past too when reflecting? So we're talking about the distance between what you wanted your future to be, how you wanted to align for it, and what it actually became. What about when you look backwards and you have regret, right?
I don't have that. I'm not a big regret person. So.
I know, but a lot, everyone.
So, but I'm saying I can't empathize. I can't give a good answer because I'm not sure.
Well, I started off by saying, I think you're really good at this, Zach. Effective time management, right?
But that's the futuring.
That's true. That's the future.
The past is, for me, that's dead. 5 minutes, what we talked about 5 minutes ago, gone. On to the next thing.
Yeah.
And not that that's the right way to do things. That's just how my brain works.
You know what? Maybe it shifts over at that point into experiential difference. Anyway, interesting.
Nice.
Okay, so the next one, unless you have something.
No, go ahead.
Inspired leadership. That's going to require a couple things. You're going to incorporate various people's goals, but also anticipating how they're going to change over time. So social and temporal, we can move on. And then profitable product management. That means using imperfect information across all these areas, how to meet the needs of people, their expectations, distant customers. And in that, you're going to have to deal with social, temporal, spatial, and experiential difference.
Yeah, with the society we've built, you have these – things. I'm holding a microphone. Sure, it came from Germany because I know where it came from. But let's imagine it came from China, like everything else. Well, that's a long distance. So there's a whole bunch of supply chain and logistical connections that have to go on, and usually do very cooperatively and collaboratively for the most of our lives. And we're starting to see some kinks in that system, but it's been a pretty good system for us. I'll say that. We're going to start to see that distance change in terms of the manufacturing of products and renationalization because the distance is too far. So that if one country's economy or problems pop up, it's obviously now affecting everyone globally. And so we're going to have to come up with new solutions to reorganize ourselves and our economies because of that. And the pandemic has showed some of those issues.
Man, 100%. That's going to be interesting to see how that comes into play, the new distances that we're going to have in between ourselves and how we're going to bridge those gaps. It's going to be interesting.
One other point I wanted to make that's not connected to this, so totally random, is the idea of – so distance is, again, increasing the space between two things or two people. But can you build something around a product or an idea – around the concept of space, of nothingness, and make it to have a really useful function? And the answer is yes. A pitcher of water, a bucket, those are literally formed around nothing, and yet they are extremely useful. And so for me, it's the same thing in the relationship. It's like, where can I form that nothingness, that emptiness, that space, but in a way that is totally productive when it's molded the right way?
Where can you make room?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Make room and give room for them to be themselves. You know, when you try to – a lot of people that want to be together all the time, this is totally me guessing here. I bet at least one of those peoples is an ultra control freak. And they really want to control that other person. And obviously there's dependencies going on there emotionally, but I bet they're really trying to change that person somehow.
I think it could be two things. I think it could be that. I think that's a very valid one. But I also think it could be a lack of self-confidence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's good. Two needy people. Yeah, they need somebody to fill their space. But a control freak would do that.
It's almost like the control freak is the heads, the needy person is the tails.
Yeah.
The needy person's look, whatever you want, right? I don't need control. I just need love and acceptance.
Yeah, that's the sadomasochistic relationship.
Yeah. The other person is like, fine, I need somebody to control.
The needy person wants to consume someone else to fill the hole in themselves. The other person wants to do the consuming.
Yep. Yep, that's exactly right.
Anyway, that was just the bucket image in my head is interesting, and that comes out of Eastern philosophy. I didn't just make up that metaphor, but you can form a very functional, purposeful, useful thing or relationship in your life around the concept of space and distance and nothingness.
Yeah. I like that. I think that's a great idea, and I think it's somewhere where distance, space is something that's useful. You know, the idea of distance and space, I mean, if we're going to talk about it as in more of a physical term, but when you relate it to something like physics, it becomes amazing to really understand what physical space is.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, there are just a couple things that blow my mind. Because we were talking about, well, physical distance, it's really boring. You know, you just think about it, it's the space between two things. And it's like, it is, except when you take it in the extreme.
Right. When you take it down to its mathematical or chemical properties, it's really crazy.
Well, it's like we live in this world of distance that we can relate to, right? Like, how far is my house from the grocery store? How far is my kitchen to the living
room? Yeah, we love to measure.
But when you talk about things that are on extremes and all of a sudden our brain doesn't do a good job of imagining those things, that's when it gets really interesting. Like talking about the space within an atom, right? Mm-hmm. Like I read somewhere that 90%+ of an atom is just open space. And it's like, well, I can't even imagine what that means.
Yeah.
Like I can't even – you can't see it with your own naked eyes. Your brain just doesn't do a good job of imagining that. Or something like the nearest star is 7 light years away, right?
Yeah,
so traveling at the speed of light, which we can't do. No one could ever, you know, even get close to traveling the speed of light. It would take 7 years to get to the nearest star. And those types of things are, it's like, damn, that's where your mind starts to get blown, you know? Mm-hmm. And then learning about things like quantum entanglement. Well, imagine two things are on the opposite side of the universe and they are vibrating at the same frequency, and you, if you change one of them, the other one will instantly change to match that one because they are paired. They are, they call it entangled. But no, I don't know why. Maybe they have a theory why, you know. But,
well, I'm sure they do.
Yeah. And so for us to say, like, think about that, with the physical distance between those things, they're not physically connected in any way, and yet that behavior is a known behavior in physics. Kind of blows your mind.
It does.
Because distance, to us, distance is, it's what we experience.
Yeah. I think where people get in trouble is that we take a lot of concepts from the physical sciences and we try to apply them to the social side and the human side and the emotional side. And there are patterns there, of course. But you were talking about, you know, how far is the grocery store, right? The fastest way between two points is a straight line, right? Math and geometry teaches us that. That is bullshit for life. There ain't nobody, if you look at an X and Y axes, you don't start at 0, 0 and then your life just goes perfectly diagonally up. That ain't how it looks. It goes up and then down and crashes through the X axis and comes back up and then might do a loop-de-loop and go back to 0. It goes all over the place.
Yeah.
But that's what makes life awesome, right? It ain't going to be a straight line. Like you look at somebody who's successful and you think, oh, they overnight success, or, oh, they just had the gifted talent, or, oh, whatever. You don't see all the blood, sweat, and tears, all the distance they had to cover in their personal time when they choose to give up all of that to get to where we see them.
You just said the word that I was going to go to, and that's, what about time? What about the distance of time? The weird thing to think about in life, I think, when you were talking about distance and time, right? Because when you were talking about the X and Y axis, what I was imagining you were saying is that the X axis, the bottom one, is time. So it will always be traveling in one direction. The Y axis is whatever you want to call it, emotional fulfillment, happiness, you know, whatever. And like you said, it's going to go up, it's going to go down, it's going to go all kinds of ways. But the crazy thing about life and distance and time is that time is like a river. It just flows one way.
Well, how we experience it.
That's how we experience it.
Yeah, that's the important part. That is our experience because that's how our brain is engineered to feel it. But I think that time's very different.
And it's almost like the distance of time. You know, you hear sayings like time heals all wounds, right?
And that could be distance heals all wounds.
Yeah. But on the flip side, like, you can lose good things because of the distance of time as well.
Well, every piece of conventional wisdom has a shadow side.
Yes. And talking about your – well, sometimes there's instances where space is useful.
Yeah.
Well, in what more – what is a better example of space being useful than having time?
Yeah. time. I mean, as a mediator, as somebody that's seen humans at their worst in very difficult, crushing scenarios, divorce, businesses being broken up, that kind of stuff. You convince the story you tell yourself is all is lost. Like, everything's horrible. I'm not going to bounce back. And then most people do. Not all, but most. Because we're resilient. That might be my favorite quality of our species, is our resiliency. We don't necessarily bounce back like the pandemic. We might not bounce back to where we were, but we're going to bounce to where we need to go.
Yeah. You said that saying a bit.
Well,
ago,
I
and it
took
hit
it
hard.
From the TED Talk your wife made us watch.
It was a very good one.
Well, I've got no other new topics unless you do. I've got change challenges, but if you've got other stuff, dive in, man.
No way, man. I think we've done a good job of talking about this thing called distance. And I guess if I'm rounding out my thoughts about the way that it is, that, you know, obviously you start off, you think about physical distance. And physical distance seems like a boring thing, but really if you mull it over, I don't know if it's just the nerd in me or whatever, but there are some fascinating things when you think about physical distance and then think about how it relates to your life. And then there are some things that are not so tangible, you know, that are distance. And one that's awesome, I think, to think about. If you're talking about physical distance, you're talking about space, right? And then the next thing, obviously, time. Time distance. Time distance is very useful, and it can be both a enabler and it can be a barrier. You know, so you have
I'd say enabling and constraining at the same time.
Yep. And so you have to think about that. And then I like the idea of what we talked most about, because it's probably most of what we're going to experience in our lives and probably will be the most impactful to us. And that is the psychological distance things and how we relate with others, how we experience this life and everything. So
nice. Good summary, man. Yeah. Do you have any change challenges?
Nope.
Okay, I definitely have one. And it is extending the advice that Will Smith gave me. Not getting jiggy with it. But I do believe he does love Miami. And that is, I want you to think about, where is the distance between you and your partner? So either your spouse, or if you don't have a spouse or whatever, your best friend or whatever, a coworker. Pick somebody that's meaningful and you have a lot of frequent contact with. And I want you to think about, where do we have distance? And pick one. Don't pick a form of distance that you want or that is needed or that's good for the relationship. I'm talking about one where you might have that silent resentment, that private resentment that builds a gap. And that if you keep filling that gap, then one day you'll look at that person and be like, who are they? And you've helped contribute to that, and just know that. So think about that and then maybe make a decision to reduce that gap some way by having a difficult conversation about it.
Why give? I think that's it.
Okay. There you go.
I think that's it. I mean, obviously I can think of others, but that is going to be the most important one.
All right. Cool.
All right.
Well, thank you all for listening. It's so funny. Sometimes when we start these, we look at our concept, our value for the day, and we're like, damn, this is going to suck. And that's really what we thought about it. And it ended up being fun for me. It was a good conversation, and my brain went in some directions that I hadn't thought about. So good times.
I'm going to keep this forefront of my mind as I go throughout my next several days. And I'm going to try to think about that distance, right? And how to properly use it, because it's a tool.
Yeah, John F. Kennedy was famous for saying time is a tool, but so is distance.
Yeah.
So use that. Well, thanks for listening. Have a great day. If you're in St. Louis, hopefully you enjoy the sunshine. And as we say at Life Lab, experiment with life.